Hey, Mindful Medicina listeners, we are super excited to be starting season 2.
Woo, woo, woo! Thank you so much for your support throughout season 1. We had such a blast and we had some incredible, enlightened, and empowering speakers. And we hope to continue with our second season, bringing you some amazing conversations.
Yeah, we're coming full circle. We got some great topics that we're covering today with Heather Shepherd. And of course, a lot of sun talk, just the way we began the last one.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks again, everybody. We love you.
We do love you. And thank you so much for your support. Mindful Medicina is keeping on and keeping on.
Welcome to the Mindful Medicina podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jeanette Daniels. I'm a naturopathic medical doctor on a mission to inspire a renewed confidence in the intelligence of the human body. And joining the conversation today is my friend and colleague, Janelle Hartman, lymphatic and colon hydrotherapist, esteemed yoga teacher of teachers, and the co-producer of this show. There are many causes of head injury in children and adults. The most common injuries are from motor vehicle accidents, falls, or as a result of shaking a child, as in cases of child abuse. Traumatic brain injury, or sometimes called TBI, happens when a sudden external physical assault damages the brain. It is one of the most common causes of disability and death in adults. TBI is a broad term that describes a vast array of injuries that happens to the brain. The damage can be focal, which is confined to one area of the brain, or it can be diffuse, which happens in more than one area of the brain. The severity of a brain injury can range from a mild concussion to a severe injury that results in coma. When there is a direct blow to the head, the bruising of the brain and the damage to the internal tissue and blood vessels occurs. A bruise directly related to trauma at the site of impact is called a coup lesion. If the brain jolts backwards and hits the skull on the opposite side, that can cause a bruise called a contra-coup lesion. The jarring of the brain against the sides of the skull can cause shearing or tearing of the internal lining, the tissues, and blood vessels, leading to internal bleeding, bruising, or swelling of the brain. Diffuse axonal injury can also occur, which is the shearing or tearing of the brain's long connective nerve fibers called axons. That happens when the brain is injured as it shifts and rotates inside the bony skull. Diffuse axonal injury usually causes coma and injury to many different parts of the brain. But bear in mind, the changes in the brain are often microscopic and may not be evident on a CT scan or an MRI, which would lead medical professionals to assume nothing is wrong. Meanwhile, the patient reports never feeling the same since the TBI. TBIs can negatively affect almost all systems of the body. Systems affected include cognitive, motor, perceptual, and sensory deficits. Communication and language challenges are often seen as well. Social difficulties, autonomic nervous system irregularities, personality, or psychiatric changes, and in some cases, epilepsy. Today's guest, Heather Shepherd, an inspiring natural healer and a certified ancestral health practitioner, holds a master's degree in acupuncture, Chinese medicine, and homeopathy. She joins us to share her voyage to healing from a TBI she incurred at 23 when she lost control of her car, slamming her head onto the steering wheel. When she was healing from her TBI, she went to every holistic health practitioner imaginable, such as chiropractic, acupuncture, energy medicine, Reiki, craniosacral, shamanistic soul retrievals, the list goes on. The bottom line is that Heather always left disappointed. She had sometimes zero improvements and sometimes even felt worse. After almost a decade of one unsuccessful health practitioner after the other, she learned how to heal her TBI using sunlight, homeopathy, and ancestral foods that she's basically been using on her clients for the past 15 years with great success. If you have ever suffered with any kind of brain injury, this episode is for you. With love. Heather Shepherd, hello. Welcome to Mindful Medicina Podcast. We're super excited to have you on today to go into your journey with healing from a traumatic brain injury when you were 23 years old. I was really inspired by how you were able to do that after trying a billion other things and getting no results and finding that the medicine was simply getting back to nature. So welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, too.
Welcome, Heather.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So I thought we would start off by just going into a little bit of your history prior to the traumatic brain injury, TBI, so we can get a little bit of foundation of who you are and what you've done and how things changed after that TBI and how things are continuing to change for the better.
Yeah, that's awesome. I don't talk about that part of my life a lot anymore. I don't have the opportunity to really. So I appreciate the question because it was definitely a polar opposite of how I live my life today. And in many ways, I was very much an athlete and in the athletic world and playing basketball and lifting weights and training professional athletes and doing crazy things with my body and very, very physically active lifestyle, which I still embody today, but it was much different then. It was more so focused around athletics. And so, yeah, that was like my past life, I like to say. And I had no idea my life was going to be any different until I got in the car accident and then literally couldn't do many of those physically rigorous, active things for many years, for at least a decade after the car accident. So, so before the TBI, before my car accident, I was very much in the athletic world and playing Division I basketball and training after college, training professional athletes. And I was like, yeah, this is how my life's going to go. Okay, I'm on point, right? It's like, life just had a different path, which I'm glad about. but yeah, no, that's kind of what happened before the car accident. And one day I was driving to work to train athletes, my training job, and just totally lost control of my car. I have no idea. I can't even tell you what happened. It was some act of nature. And lost control of the car, split a telephone pole in two, hit my head on I think the steering wheel or the dashboard or something, and then got a really bad TBI as a result. I had MRIs and CAT scans, and they're like, oh, you're fine. Go back to your old way of doing things. Go back to your job. Keep doing what you're doing. And I was like, cool. But I actually can't, like, I'm in so much pain and like dizziness and migraine headaches and all of these symptoms that developed as a result of that accident. I literally physically couldn't do those things anymore and soon had to quit my job and come to terms with that and accept that. And which was really hard for a 23-year-old to be like, wait, you know, I can't be physically active. And that's all I knew at that point in time. And so it was a huge game changer for me that I definitely didn't want to accept and tried to push against for many years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Your primary symptoms with the TBI were migraines, fatigue. Did you have any coordination issues or any gastrointestinal changes?
So I had definitely changes in my sleep. Definitely had a harder time sleeping. Mm-hmm. Gastrointestinal issues for sure. Like I was like, wait, what's going on here? I developed more of like an irritable bowel in that time that I never experienced before that time. Brain fog, migraine headaches, dizziness, fatigue was insane. Mm-hmm. And just really aggravated by any type of physical activity, like all of those symptoms. And and anxiety, that was a big one. There was a lot of PTSD and anxiety from the car crash. And I sense it's because I was trapped in my car. For some reason, my nervous system really got hit hard by that, because I think I was, from what I hear, I was struggling to get out of the car, but couldn't. And so that feeling of being trapped created a lot of anxiety, and that was very residual after the accident as well. So those were huge side effects from that experience.
It's interesting how you were saying that nothing shows up on the MRI or the CAT scan, which I think is a really important thing to note, because, you know, sometimes people will be gaslit and told that there's nothing wrong, nothing is showing up, but the patient or the person suffering is saying, look, at something is still wrong and off. And so sometimes these diagnostic images and testing doesn't give us the full picture, right?
Oh my gosh, I see it so often, and I actually see it go both ways. Like some people are like overdiagnosed, and then some people go in and they get testing and they're like, my thyroid, I know it's off, or I know I have something wrong with my adrenals, or I know something's wrong with my gut, and they go in and get testing and they're like, no, you're fine, but they know they're not fine. And then on the opposite end, they're like, oh, you have this or that disease. And then where it's either very minor, and then they get taken down this path of like a total shit show of prescriptions and maybe even surgeries and very invasive treatments, where they're, if they just had things like sunlight and homeopathy and diet to help in that situation, they could have totally turned it around without needing to go that route. And I agree with you guys that like, I've seen it go both ways. I see it all the time.
I think that's, you know, a good point to say that sometimes people are overdiagnosed and things are found incidentally, right? So you see that a lot with slip discs or herniated bulging discs, and everyone will assume that, or the physician will tell you that this is causing your pain, but it actually may not be. And we learn that in medical school, as a matter of fact, that you'll often find things incidentally, and then that is supposed to be causing the pain, where you really don't know if that is the case, and then you're getting these unnecessary surgeries. So
such a thing. And I think there's so many, like, you know, preventative medicine things out there in the allopathic system that, oh, this test is preventative and get your mammograms and get, you know, your colonoscopies, and the list goes on, right? And it's like, that's what they consider preventative medicine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not preventing cancer, by the way. I remember being in class one day and our professor talking about mammograms and ultrasounds and thermography and comparing and contrasting all of them. And he said, mark my word, one day we'll look at mammograms as something barbaric, like a frontal lobotomy.
I totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. A 1,000,000%.
Yep. Yeah. Same with colonoscopy, you know.
And they're portrayed as like something really amazing and like, oh, you have to do it or you'll die. And it's just, it's so lopsided and inaccurate in my experience. So Yeah.
Anyway. And when your sales leverage is death and is in fear and the specter of death are not surviving, it's just the perfect marketplace. Yeah. It's the industrial complex.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Nailed it. I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
So for sure. What, tell us about your journey in trying to heal from this TBI, before getting to the actual medicine that worked for you. Can you tell us all of the modalities that you tried?
I'm going to try to remember all of them because there's a lot. I literally spent thousands of dollars because I'm like, well, something has to work. Like, you know, when I, first of all, there's nothing that the allopathic field can really do for TBIs. There's not much they can do for many disorders, but TBIs, it was like, okay, that's a pretty obvious. They can't do anything. One, I went to a neurologist once and they wanted to put me on like anti-seizure medication. And I'm like, wait, but I'm not having seizures. But that's just what they thought they should do. Mm-hmm. I didn't try that, thankfully, but I tried a lot of natural modalities, holistic modalities, because there was nothing available in the allopathic world. And at that time in my life, maybe I would have tried something if there was even a choice, but there wasn't. Mm-hmm. So thankfully there wasn't. But I tried literally chiropractic, acupuncture, craniosacral, shamanism, soul retrievals. I mean, honestly, if you named it, I probably tried it. And I'm not saying that any of those things are bad or we shouldn't use them or they don't have a place. They just didn't help me or my TBI, and they just were incapable of getting to the root of what my symptoms were. And honestly, I got to a point where I was like, well, I guess I'm just going to have to live with these symptoms and accept this. And that was a tough pill to swallow. And I don't think I ever fully swallowed it, but I got real close. Mm-hmm. Because I went like 10 years with these symptoms and not getting any relief. And that was really frustrating. And yeah, so honestly, I tried everything you could think of, except for the things that I didn't try, you know, until that experience happened. And then, you know, the sunlight piece came in and the homeopathy piece came in, and it was like, uh-huh. Oh my God, I can actually feel like, okay, there's some hope here. I can actually feel different. This is, it changed my life 100,000,000%.
What led you to that? How did you find the sun medicine? God.
Okay. That's an awesome question. So I had experienced a little bit of relief from acupuncture with regard to my symptoms, and the symptoms would be at bay for, you know, maybe a few hours at tops, a few days after an acupuncture treatment. So I'm like, this is it. I'm going to acupuncture school. And I started studying the medicine. I went to school in Portland, Oregon for like over 3 years. And I got to this point where I was like, I can't keep doing this. One, because the acupuncture isn't sticking. I'm not feeling good. I don't feel good in my body here in Portland. I was like, I literally had a dream about Santa Fe. And I was like, well, yeah, one day I'll go take a road trip to Santa Fe. This was many years ago. So, we had spring break and I was like, yeah, let's go. And so I drove down to Santa Fe and, I was like, oh my God, it's not raining. There's sunlight. And I didn't go back. I just didn't go back. Like, I went back eventually and got my stuff and like then drove back, but I never left. And that's when I started putting the pieces together with regard to sunlight. Yeah.
So was it the sunlight first before the homeopathy. When did you study yeah. homeopathy? Because you have a master's in classical homeopathy, correct?
Yeah. So that was a really, they happened right around the same time. And so I literally think I took my first homeopathic remedy and then went on the road trip. So I'm not sure it's like a chicken or egg situation. But they pretty much happened within a few months of each other. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I can't for sure say, but I know that, what I experienced with sunlight coming to Santa Fe, and I was like, oh my gosh, the sunrise. And then I started hearing some podcasts, I think back then, on, oh, just watch the sunrise. And I was like, cool, I'll go out. What is it going to hurt? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I've tried everything. So yeah, okay, I'll watch the sunrise. I was like, you know, whatever. and I go out there and I was like, okay, this felt good. I felt good in my body. And I remember that night I slept really well for the first time in a long time. And I was like, okay, I'm going to stay out longer the next day. And then it just kept building like that. And I had more energy and my anxiety levels went down and I was sleeping a lot better. Mm. And my digestion started to improve. And I was like, oh, this like free thing in the sky that I, you know, it completely turned things around. And yeah, so I started experimenting with the different sunlight frequencies and how I feel in each one. And that really was a huge turning point in my healing.
You were also breaking into correcting the circadian imbalances and, you know, all the cells having a clock, right? Mm-hmm. In your brain. Whew. So important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like everything, the chaos all of a sudden becomes organized.
Exactly. And that, like, I had a very visceral experience of that, mm-hmm. which was, you know, that's what I think was so transformative, was that I actually felt a huge shift in my brain and in my body with that. And I was like, whoa, there's a lot more to this. We have to talk about this more, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I just started experimenting with that with my clients at the time and my family and my wife, and literally nobody was complaining about it. And everyone was experiencing some benefit in some way. And mm-hmm. I was like, this is bigger than what at the time people were making it out to be. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was huge for sure.
Yeah.
And what is the interface between the sun medicine and the homeopathy? And we'll ask you to actually explain for our listeners also what homeopathy is, if you could put that in a teacup for us too.
Okay, so are you asking like the connection between them or how they're related, or?
Well, let's start with what is homeopathy, and then we'll kind of move into the, like, yeah, how they relate, how you wove them together.
Cool. Okay. Homeopathy is it's a very interesting medicine. I like to refer to it as the quintessential quantum medicine, because you literally take a substance, a plant, a mineral, and you take that substance, you dilute it like you would in making a tincture in alcohol or water. But after that point, after it becomes essentially a tincture, you take that substance and you dilute it and you do something what's called succuss, which is just shaking very vigorously, like tens of hundreds of thousands of times, until you get this substance that only contains the energetics of the substance. It actually doesn't contain any of the original crude material of the substance. Mm. And so what you're left with is the energetics of a substance. And that changes depending on, for those of you familiar with homeopathy, there's different potencies, there's different strengths of a substance. And so, So you take that. And this is why most people are like, oh, it's just a placebo, because there's actually not any of the original, crude substance in that remedy. But if you've taken a remedy for something, and like, say, for example, with my TBI, and I take a remedy and then I stop having a shooting pains in my brain, and it stops feeling bruised as a result of the accident, even years after, or, you know, you feel these shifts, it's like, oh, that's definitely much more than a placebo. And so in essence, in a nutshell, that's kind of what homeopathy, how you prepare the remedy. That's how they're made. That, and there's thousands of different remedies, that are available in homeopathic form that somebody could take depending on, you know, what their need is.
Mm-hmm. And they can be used acutely or constitutionally. Can you go into the differences there?
Yeah, sure. So you could treat acutely, you could treat somebody's constitution, you can treat a chronic condition. And so for example, acute meaning something that is short term. You get a bad flu, you get a fever, you have an ear infection, you have a sore throat, you have cystitis, you have, any of these acute things. Homeopathy can work brilliantly for those conditions. And it can also work amazingly for chronic conditions. And it's really unique in the sense that you don't actually prescribe homeopathically. You don't prescribe based on like, oh, I have diabetes, or I have, you know, a diagnosis. You treat the person's mental, emotional, and physical symptoms, and you get very, nuanced with regard to their symptoms. I mean, you really get specific about the symptoms. You know, for example, if you go in, you say to your primary care physician, or you go into urgent care and your kid has an ear infection, or you have an ear infection, they're like, oh, ear infection, here you go. But in homeopathy, you would ask a lot more questions to specify the treatment. Like, what side is the ear infection on? Is it worse with cold? Is it worse with hot? Can you touch it? Is it worse with touch? Do you want to keep it covered? I mean, it goes on and on with regard to really getting clear about somebody's symptoms. And you do that for acute situations or chronic situations. And that's how you prescribe accurately a homeopathic remedy. So, I'm not sure if that answered your
question. No, it's great. So constitutionally speaking, it's like, do you believe that people come in and they have a specific remedy that they're born into or incarnated into, and that might be a go-to for kids before, say, going for an acute remedy or a chronic, right?
I love that question. Yeah. So how I've experienced it is that we all have constitutions, but those constitutions can change. So we typically have many different constitutions, or I refer to them as layers, like constitutional layers. And so once you hit one layer and you're able to remove that layer, which, you know, can take several months to do so, but once that layer is removed, a new constitutional layer will come up, one that's likely been suppressed in years before or at birth or something. But I find it extremely rare for somebody to have just one constitutional layer, and you give them that remedy and they're like set for life. Mm-hmm. But once you clear that layer and that constitution, then another one is able to emerge that wouldn't be able to if that upper layer wasn't removed. So that's kind of how I was taught homeopathy and what I've experienced over the past several years of practicing the medicine as well.
So, kind of peeling the onion Yeah. Just kind of seeing, yeah. Okay, what's next? I mean, we are dynamic growing creatures. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, and I'm sure that when you get into the energetics and the psychology and the ancestry, even we can probably peel back layers beyond just our physical lifetime. There's things that are so much deeper.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
I think you can go through constitutional shape shifting, if you will, especially if you've been, you know, especially if you've been vaccinated, then you are going to essentially pull your child out of their original constitution per se. Right. And in each offense or injury that we incur can sort of shape shift us out. And so I like to look at it from that angle as well, that whatever we take in, right, it be it sound, you know, food, energy from people, drugs, everything is input to the system energetically, not just on the 3D plane. So if we're talking about homeopathy being frequency medicine, every input changes the constitution that we might have originally had anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I love how you put that. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What ended up, if you don't mind, what was the homeopathic remedy that you found some benefit with?
Okay. There have been many, but I'll talk about my initial one. And I'll say, if you have a TBI, please just, I put like a warning label out, like, please know that homeopathy isn't like, oh, you have this, so this remedy, this means you take this, and that there's a whole, mm-hmm. You really have to understand somebody's unique symptoms, because everybody who has cancer or everybody who has a TBI will very likely get a very, a different remedy or need it, require a different remedy. Mm-hmm. So for my personal healing, the first remedy I took was Arnica, and people are like, oh yeah, I take Arnica. My kid falls and I give him Arnica, or but I took a very high potency. You yes. cannot buy the potency of the Arnica that I took in a store. They don't sell it. Mm-hmm. I took an exceptionally high potency of Arnica. Mm-hmm. And that was the impetus to go and start changing my tissues and breaking up the stagnant blood in my brain, which who knows could have caused real problems later in my life. But that was the initial remedy that got the ball rolling, that changed the momentum with regard to my TBI. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was on that single remedy. I literally took one dose. It was one dose of a very strong potency of Arnica. And I was on that for at least a year before I required a new remedy. And which also really tends to baffle people that are like, wait, you took one dose of a few pellets of a remedy and that was acting for a year. Our modern minds tend to have a hard time. I did at the beginning. I was like, yeah, right. Like I'm going to need something like, you know, in a month at least, like minimum. Right. But no, it literally, if you don't interrupt the process, meaning if you don't antidote the remedy, it will continue to work on you for 12, 14, 18 months. Yeah, so that was the remedy that jump started the healing process for me in a really huge way.
And you had mentioned the dose was really, really high potency. So I just wanted to bring this information to the listeners, right? When you go to the stores, you'll see a 6C or a 30C. Can you go into how that is broken down and, you know, the mental, emotional range, what kind of frequencies are you looking at? And talk about maybe dilution, right? So because it's the opposite of what you would think it would be, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. So the higher you get in potency, the more the remedy's actually been diluted. So so basically what that means is the more and more frequency, there's less and less of the substance and more of the frequency of the substance, the higher in the potency you go. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's usually people are like, oh, you know, that would be backward in most of our modern minds, but you know, for mental, emotional, issues or very strong physical symptom issues, actually the higher in potency you go, typically the better result. And you often need that high of a potency to be able to really change the momentum of strong physical disorders or mental emotional imbalances in the body. So you'll have to, typically I either prescribe in the M potency for those things or in the LM potency for those things, which are both deleted thousands upon thousands of time from the original substance.
And that being like a million, right? For M, and like a 30 C is 100 century, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I had an experience. I had a pretty bad whiplash from a car accident, a rear ending. And this was many, many years ago. And I remember, I was working at my current health clinic at the time. And I had one of the naturopaths who did craniosacral work on me. And she's like, okay, well, I keep running into this kind of, your tissues are just really in shock. And she gave me a high dose of Arnica. And then we waited a little bit, and then she was actually able to access my tissues. And I heard you say that then your tissues had a mutability, that I think there's something like that, that your tissues could accept something else. Or I can't remember how you said it, but.
Yeah. Yeah. So I experienced that often with myself and my clients, that, you know, if the body experiences something, whether it's a physical insult or mental emotional insult, or like you experienced the whiplash, your tissues and the water surrounding your tissues will hold that memory or that energy or that trauma. And, you know, people haven't really done, there's been some studies on homeopathy, and I feel medium about studies in general, but a hard medium, but homeopathy would be a very tough thing to study. But what I've noticed, or what I sense, is that it's able to change the water in our cells and surrounding ourselves, and it can target where the trauma or physical issue is in the body and help change that. And so I sense that's why, like what you experience, like you could access the tissues more, or what I experienced, like, oh, I couldn't touch my head when I, after my accident, and I took Arnica, and then I could, and it was no more bruising. And there's this whole tissue change, and I sense it's how it impacts, the water and the frequency of the cells in the area that is damaged. Mm. And so that's just a personal sense of what I think is going on some level in the body after somebody takes a remedy.
Mm. I first discovered homeopathy when I was around 27, 28. And you'll appreciate this, being a basketball player as well. But I was coaching basketball for high school, deaf school, actually. So that was really interesting. But anyways, I took an elbow to my face, and my tooth went through my lip, and I also got somehow elbowed in my eye. But anyways, I was black and blue. And I just arbitrarily went to like a health food store and was told to check out Arnica. And it was just unbelievable how fast the black and blue discoloration went away. And then fast forward all the way to naturopathic medical schools, and I really fell in love with homeopathy. I guess I'm a closeted witch or something, but I love, so I'm pretty hood, you know. I'm from Buffalo, New York, and so it's like I have a friend who actually says I'm like part hood, part unicorn.
Oh my God, I love it.
And so, you know, just totally fell in love with this energy medicine. And at the same time, I give like hardcore deep tissue massages. But I really mastered homeopathy pretty well in medical school. We had about 100 students in our class, and I graduated number 2 in homeopathy. And I just found it to be something so sacred and magical. And I thought for sure that I was going to be doing homeopathy with my patients. Fast forward to residency. And then I tried to get homeopathy into the clinic. And of course, you're not going to be surprised to hear this, but he was like, well, it takes way too long to do, an intake. You're going to spend 3 hours and you're going to give them an $8 homeopathic remedy and nobody makes money off of this. So
So that
unfolded, and then come to find out that the naturopathic medical school, I went to school in Portland, Oregon as well. I went to National College of Natural Medicine. It's now NUNM. But they apparently got rid of the homeopathy as a required course. In fact, we had 5 required quarters of homeopathy, and my class was the very last class to have this 5-quarter class homeopathy. Yeah, and then now you can only get 1 elective if you want. It's like 1 course and it's an elective. And so I barely skimmed out of there really being able to understand homeopathy moving forward. Naturopaths of this day and age do not know homeopathy. And that's why I was so excited to find you, because I wanted to talk about it here, because I couldn't even invite any of the newer naturopaths on board to really go into the magic of this energy medicine. So thank you so much.
Oh yeah. When did you graduate? That's where I went to acupuncture school.
Oh, what? 2016.
Yeah. Let's see. 16. I bet you we saw each other.
What?
Yep, I bet you.
That's cool. Oh my gosh. That's crazy. If we passed each other and didn't know it, but like,
I know.
The universe was like, someday these two are going to talk.
Yeah. My God, I love it. No, I think that's exactly when I was there.
Yeah, the lack of sun was so bad there. But then I moved to Seattle after my residency in Salt Lake City, and I came here to Seattle for a job. And that's how I met Janelle at the same clinic that we're at, or I was at. And I was stunned by how very little sun there was in Seattle, even compared to Portland has double the amount of sunny days. Can you believe
really?
That?
Wow.
Dude, that's how bad it is here. We get 71 days of sun in Seattle. Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
You go on vacation or what? Or do you guys packed to go get around it?
I'm going to Tulum for my birthday next month. I'm a sun worshiper. I'm Greek and Italian, so I got to get me some. But I definitely plan to head out to probably Florida or something like that. And, they don't recognize naturopathic doctors there, so I'll forego the title. I don't give a crap about the title, but I'll still be doing the same thing I'm doing, which is helping people and treating people, not diseases. So take that.
I think that's awesome. Are you going on vacation there? You're thinking of moving there.
I would move there. Yeah.
You would.
Yep.
Yeah. You all would go and move there.
Yeah. I mean, what good is a dead doctor to anybody, right?
I'm going to start using that. That's so good. Oh my gosh. I love it.
It's like, I'm still a doctor, but I got no teeth. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I love it. Okay, cool. Well, that's exciting. That's exciting.
Yeah. So the sun is key. I just thought I'd give you a little bit of background on like my experience with homeopathy and where homeopathy is heading. The powers that be know exactly what homeopathy does. I had a speaker come and talk to us about homeopathy in one of our rounds, grand rounds. And he actually was telling me that the FDA had come to him and said, hey, can you tell us how this stuff is working?
Wow.
That's why they're always trying to pull it,
God. Yeah. Don't tell them.
Don't tell them anything. we want to save all the elite, but not you. I use that term loosely. Elite.
Oh yeah.
Delete.
Yeah. 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 We're just gonna call them delete.
I love it. See why you reached out to me. Okay, good. This is good.
Yeah. So, yeah. And so speaking, going into talking about teeth, I wanted to talk a little bit about food as medicine and ancestral health and all of that, because I've been going through, you know, I used to eat vegan for even since I was a little kid. I had such a really hard time with flesh. It's an emotional thing as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it showed up in my teeth, and I was always the kid out of all of the seven kids that had the worst teeth and blah, blah. So anywho's, what I wanted to talk about with you, and I'm changing my ways. I wanted to talk about the medicine that you speak of, and what you also were able to incorporate into your protocol for healing was food as medicine. Can you give us your perspective on food?
Sure. Yeah.
And talk about you live on 5 acres, right? Of property.
Yeah. We live on a 5-acre, farm, my wife and I, and we have two amazing A2 grass-fed dairy cows, which I didn't know. I was like, oh, let's get a cow and I can make, we can have our own butter source. And then I'm like, wait, this is a lot of milk. This is like way more than a butter source. And I actually really realized I love cows, and I was like, oh my gosh, these are amazing, like, creatures. I love them. So now we have two and three on the way, because one of them is pregnant. But yes, I live on a farm. Yeah. And we currently have dairy cows and just heaps of chickens. And we have two pigs. But I will like rewind a little bit and back up to when I got my TBI. I was vegetarian. And so right about the same time I got on the homeopathy page and the sunlight page, it was not long after that I also realized that I was making myself and my brain more sick by not eating meat. And so that was a total change as well. And when I started eating meat, that was, people like get, the meat gets a lot of, it gets beat up bad. Mm-hmm. And I sense it's because most people, and most of the meat in our country, as you know, like over 90% of it is produced in some sort of CAFO operation, like a confined feeding GMO operation where the animals are treated like shit and they're fed horrific things that you can't even imagine, and they're treated horrifically. And so all of our attention goes to, oh, we shouldn't eat meat because animals are treated this way. And honestly, when we started to get our own animals, like I knew this logistically in my head before we got animals, like, oh, you could just treat them a different way, just put them on grass and feed them good things. And then when we got our animals, I'm like, wait, but you could also be in this really beautiful relationship with them. Mm-hmm. And be connected with them, and that brings a whole other element. And then you could also rotate them around your property, and so like all this new growth of grass and native plants and native grasses start to grow. And it's like, it became this whole thing, this whole new insight for me when we got our own animals as well. I'd been eating meat for years before we got them, but when we got the animals, I'm like, oh, this even goes beyond like grass fed because, or organic. Because you could have an organic, organic beef or grass-fed beef, but how were they treated and what environment were they in? And that, when we got our own animals, I was like, whoa, this is a whole other thing. This is a whole other, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. consideration mm-hmm. that I didn't even No, because I didn't have animals. I didn't have farm animals. So now, yes, I eat a lot of meat and butter and seasonal vegetables, and it's very much a big focus of my diet, and I felt it's really helped my blood sugar issues, which are definitely a genetic predisposition for me. It's helped my brain immensely to eat meat, and eat, these fats and animal fats and so forth. And yeah, it's been super, super supportive. And I think that meat gets a bad rap. And then we tend to go in extreme directions, like, oh, then just only eat meat, or just only eat plants, or only eat raw foods. And it's like, dude, it's not like that black and white, you know?
Oh,
So,
man.
yeah, but I think finding a balance with all of those things is a really, like, that's what nature provides us with. So why not go with that?
And it's just the need that we have to have all this diversity of materials so that our gut flora can have this profile. I always tell people like stop popping these probiotic pills, like start having an actual real seasonal diet where, where God is basically showing you what you can eat to make your gut flora, in each season. And I enjoyed this aspect of an interview that I heard you on the other day where you were talking about even like the quality of the light that those are grown in is what actually then turns on all these things in your body. So that, I mean, it's like a specific seasonal time that we want these plants that have this particular type of light on them. And I would love to hear you talk about that. And then I do want to loop back to some of the sun medicine in that regard, but the sun plays a huge part in that seasonal eating.
Oh man, you're gonna get me fired up with this one. So a lot, this is not to be a downer, it's just to bring awareness. A lot of people, especially in big, it's unfortunate, but even like organic grocery stores or even some co-ops, a lot of the produce is grown under grow lights. It's like just strong LED lights. And the quality of that food and the robustness of those plants is weak. There's less nutrients. They're not getting real sunlight, so they're not getting as many nutrients, and the soil is much more depleted because of the lack of sunlight. And you're getting this basically artificially produced substance. And it was really interesting. We have a really great garden, and one of our friends gave us a few tomatoes that he started under grow lights, like really strong LED lights, this winter. And he's like, yeah, he takes the plants. We planted them in the garden. Literally, they're all dead. And all of our other tomatoes that were grown from seed, in sunlight, like just according to nature, they're thriving. And I was like, and I didn't even, like, I legit tried to keep them alive. I'm like, I'm gonna give them a chance. I'm really gonna give them a chance. And I did the exact same things. They're even in the same beds with the other tomatoes. They're all effing dead. They produce nothing. And I'm like, this is just such a good example. But the lettuces are a huge target. Lettuce, tomatoes, microgreens, these things are really, I'm sure there's many other things you could grow under grow lights, but those are some of the main ones right now that when you go into your grocery store, I would be very curious about how they were actually grown, because you can say organic and you can say all of these things on the label, but what type of light were they grown under? That's what I want to know. I really want to get curious about that. Because then you eat that thing and it's going to have far less nutritional value. And I sense it's going to produce more inflammation in the body because it's just chock full of blue light, you know?
Yes, that's right.
So, I really, I think that's a huge thing right now because there's so many of these type of quote unquote greenhouses that are being put up, especially outside of major cities. I know Atlanta has a really big one right now, and I'm sure other cities do as well, that have, you go in there and the lighting, it's horrible. They're all inside. It's super sterile. It's like your plants should have shit on them and bugs and, you know, like real soil and sunlight. And these things, it's so sterile. And
we're not doing operation in here, people.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would get curious about that when you go and you do your grocery shopping.
Gosh, another example of the ends justify the means in this kind of a janky way where it's just like, well, but here's the food, you know, here's the plant, right, you know, here it is, you know, it's just like, but like, what's the point if it's just not, doesn't have any prana, you know, like, geez,
totally. And you'll taste the difference, you know, when you put a tomato grown in sunlight and a tomato grown under a grow light, or even you'll totally be able to taste a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm gonna drop the WF word, Whole Foods. I'm gonna say the celery and the lettuce that I was buying all these years, organic, of course. They're not the same. I don't know what's going on. The lettuce was like hard and almost didn't have water. And we know that blue light causes a pseudo hypoxia. You know, it's a dehydration issue. I swear to God, this lettuce was like, I could give it to the toddler that I'm madly in love with, and we could just play with it. It's like pretend lettuce. I feel like I'm eating pretend lettuce. So I'm just like, okay, I just think I need to go to farmers markets or something. But even then I get a little bit nervous. And then, we don't even need to go into like farmed fish or whatever. It's like, what's happening there?
A lot.
Fake food. And I want to just segue back, really curious about your journey with how you used the sun to start healing yourself. Like really specifically, what are the mechanisms? Give us some, let's get geeky.
Okay. Awesome. So, so I started to go out at sunrise and I went out at sunrise because that's the time of day that there's primarily red light, but there's also blue light. Blue light from the sun is not this, it's not bad. Like, you know, it's because it's not singled out. It's not just blue light by itself. It's always blended with other light frequencies versus the LEDs in your house or in your refrigerator or whatever, your other appliances. It's not. Maybe there's some green light, but that's very similar frequency to blue light. So there's no offsetting. There's no, when you have artificial blue light, there's no way to really offset it. Versus in sunlight, blue light is always found with other light frequencies as well. So at sunrise, you have red light primarily, and you have blue light primarily. And this combination, when your eyes are looking in the direction of the sun, and without your glasses or your contacts, and your eyes are looking at this light, what happens is cortisol, it gives your hypothalamus this signal to, okay, hey, start releasing cortisol. And not in a way whereas if you just drank a Red Bull or like had an espresso shot, but it's like in this trickle down way. It's like, okay, I'm going to start to turn the faucet on, and here goes drip, drip, drip. Here comes the cortisol down the anterior pituitary gland. And this is, if you start watching the sunrise and you're out there for, you know, 15, 20, 30 minutes, you very likely will get to this point where you'll feel like a switch went off in your brain and you feel more awake.
Yes.
You're like, wait, something just happened. I feel alive. I feel awake. I feel like I have more energy. And that's cortisol. That's cortisol that's started to get released when you started looking at the sunrise. Because up until that point, you know, melatonin was ruling the roost. You were asleep, you were healing, you were in autophagy, apoptosis, all of that because of melatonin, which is released during the dark and when you sleep. But that switch, it gets paused as soon as you, here comes the sun, here comes sunrise, and then your body shifts from melatonin production or release to cortisol release. And that's a really big switch that you want to have flip at that time of day. So I started watching sunrise. I started experiencing that. And then you have the red light there, which is super anti-inflammatory. It's very energizing to your cells. It's very important for ATP energy production. It's very hydrating to your cells. And so you have this unique balance of anti-inflammatory, but then you also have, okay, here's cortisol and I'm going to start producing more energy. And so you have these two major things going on first thing in the morning when you're watching sunrise. Mm-hmm. So I started to learn this after I started to experience and feel these things in my body. And I was like, oh, that's why I feel this way. Mm-hmm. And then a shift comes in because UVA also then starts to enter the picture, you know, and it depends on the type of season, the time of year, the season, your location, you know, when UVA light comes in, but UVA is the next light frequency that comes in. And then you have a whole other set of things that happen, which UVA allows your skin to tan. And if you put your skin in the red and blue light at sunrise, you will literally won't burn later in the day when UVA and UVB light show up. It's like a built-in sunscreen. It's like a built-in stimulus for melanin production. So, but you have to be in it. It's not like, oh, 5 minutes and Heather lied because now I'm burning in the sun. You have to be out there for, you know, 20, 30 minutes in that light to prevent the burn, to prep the melanin, you know, to be produced when UVA, UVB comes in. So UVA comes in and then you have this whole other stimulus of, you know, active thyroid production and melatonin recycling and dopamine and serotonin production, which are absolutely huge with regard to gut health and your gut microbiome and your brain and your brain health. And so that frequency comes in. And so all of these frequencies, I feel like, you know, there's just been a miseducation that people are like, oh, I'm in sunrise, I'm making vitamin D. You're actually not until UVB light shows up. But these first two steps are prepping your cells and your skin and your body to be able to utilize UVB. So when it does show up, you don't burn. And if you're not burning, then you're making more vitamin D. Then you're making more, you're strengthening your immune system. You're building and supporting your hormones and so forth. So after UVA, then UVB shows up if it's, you know, within the seasonal range for UVB. And that's like a superhero. If anybody has weight issues or diabetes issues, or honestly, you could put any condition under that and UVB is going to be amazing. Then that light frequency comes in. And this is all within, you know, several hours of each other. And after UVB goes away, then you start going in the opposite direction. And you're now, instead of going towards cortisol release, you're going, your body's prepping for melatonin release. That was a very fast snapshot of the Sunlight RX. So if you want me to break any of it down, just let me know.
Well, great. We'll definitely just have you, like, we'll put some stuff in the show notes. So that's always like what our listeners can do to kind of cross check if you want to go back and kind of review some of that stuff. I think you did a great job breaking that down for us. And then, yeah, we'll just kind of fill in the rest in the show notes. But boy, thank you. I was like, that was like a very great explanation. Loved it.
Good.
Yeah. And it's just amazing too, because it's just like, when did we stop going outside? I mean, there's just looking at history, and when we didn't naturally organize our day where we had to be done with kind of all this crazy stuff when the sun went down, because we had our oil lamps, and Jeanette and I love our salt lamps, you know, like we have our soft light, but like people just are flipping on the light and then just, they go all night long. And then this melatonin, cortisol stuff, which those two really regulate pretty much all the others, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. They really run the show, honestly. If you have your cortisol and melatonin release patterns, on point, you may not get a full cure. You may, but you will feel a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
You will feel a lot better.
I think that the important thing, and I don't remember who I was talking to about this yesterday, but it was kind of like an aha moment of like, look at your eyeballs are your brain.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Yes.
So like your eyes are picking up information from these light spectrums and these non-visual photoreceptors, like all of the opsins. And so is your skin with the melanopsin. And so what's happening is that people's cortisol cycle is getting flip-flopped because they're looking at blue lit toxicity all night long with their computers and their cell phones. Again, it's like unimposed blue light, right? Normally your eyes should be picking up, you know, the proper balance of all the light spectrum. But with these computers and phones, you're getting non-native blue light, which we know is set to about 12, like solar noon. So if you're looking at your computer and you don't have iris downloaded or what have you, or blue blocking glasses on, your eyes, your brain, think it's noon. It's time to go to the beach. No, it ain't.
Yeah.
So now you're like, I don't know why, but like I always get a second wind at like 10 p.m. I'm like, I wonder why.
Yep. Absolutely. That's right.
So then you get these like I'm not trying to bag on nutraceutical companies, but they always got a pill for every ill as well. But then you get Cortisol Manager coming in, right? Yeah. Like, you know, that supplement Cortisol Manager, it's like, we're going to try to help you have, you know, the flip flop corrected with our supplements. Like, just turn it off. Just turn the blue off, people.
No doubt. Yeah. And then, of course, let's, first thing in the morning, eyeballs on the phone, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If our society or people could just change that, like watch the sunrise, don't look at the phone the first thing, you know, if you're going to watch something at night, protect your eyes with something like a red lens, blue blocking glasses, or take a break. Like, I mean, that's a wild idea. Just like have some days where you don't watch at all at night. Like that will help this cycle in and of itself. And you know, don't skip breakfast, which is a whole other thing. But if you do those things, you know, that'll be exceptionally helpful for that cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cause I've heard you explain it before that you get, basically it's just like, you just get the avalanche dose, fire hose dose of the cortisol, kind of in comparison to your drip when the eyes go on that screen first thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it. The fire hose. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So talking about all of this light spectrum, blue light and all of that, not good for the brain, as we're talking about with the TBI stuff. If you've had a TBI, it's so imperative that you manage your light diet and also EMF. Do you have anything to say on the 5G, EMF, any of these EMF? I don't care if it's like generation 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's like, if you have a brain injury or even have had one and want to prevent one, I think you can have a TBI just from EMF. You don't have to have a car accident. I think we all have like small TBI is going on with all of this toxic EMF stuff.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, you know, if you forget about any, you know, studies or anything, and we just take common sense into play, our body has its own frequency, and the non-native stuff has a very different frequency than our body. And when we come in contact with that, it really is jarring and chaotic to ourselves and our own frequencies. And it completely wreaks havoc on the entire body, the brain, the eyes, the whole body. You know, we see these things now with people resting their phones and their bras and like working out, and then they develop a tumor there, or guys who like rest their phone on their lap and then they have issues with fertility or their prostate or in growths in that area. I mean, it's in all these weird cancers, like cancer of the salivary glands. It's like these things are not just this is weird. Mm-hmm. And how many people put their phone up to their mouth like that, and how for how many hours a day, or put it up to their face to scroll? And it's like we don't consider this because we can't see it. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily, for some people there's an immediate reaction to non-native EMF, but for some people there isn't, but there definitely is long-term consequences. And, you know, this guy, he's a little bit of a downer, but his research is on point. Arthur Furstenberg, The Invisible Rainbow. Like if you doubt any of the EMF stuff, like, you know, go take a look at that. Or if you believe it and someone else doesn't, and if they're like, give me a resource, that's the resource. Excellent. And there's hundreds of studies in that book that show the effect of non-native EMF on animals, on nature, on humans, on kids. And this is like, it's a huge issue. And it's, I believe one day it will get better, but I don't think that day is coming anytime soon. Mm-hmm. You know, because technology is just continuing to advance, and Starlink and all this crap that they're, mm-hmm. you know, making accessible to people who live anywhere. Man, it has a real impact for sure.
I was just hearing about how they're like literally kind of demolishing the social structures in these little villages in Africa.
Yeah.
Right now with this stuff. I'm just like, not only just like the disconnection with people, but of course in the background, the frequency stuff is going to be doing a number.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we have to organize ourselves, you know. It's like, okay, we're facing the facts, and then what do we do? What is our part?
Yeah. There's always things that you can do no matter where you live. There's always ways you can offset and reduce your exposure, and even a little bit of, you know, reducing it little by little will absolutely be helpful. Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's all these devices and all these things. I always tell people, okay, you can be, you know, buying all the little pendants and all this and that. And some of those things are actually great, but it's about recalibration. It's like, again, the best things are free. Put your feet on the ground, you know, do the grounding, refocus yourself to the real frequencies, because we can't just get our swords out and be batting off all the other ones that are coming at us, because some of them you don't even know about. So it's like, but what do we know is like mama is down there offering herself to us, and, you know, just things like that. I think it's good for people to realize, you know, we don't have to be trying to be paranoid and fighting everything off. We just have to go to the source and recalibrate.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's definitely easier to do when you don't live in an urban jungle. And I would plug this, that if you do, like, you know, Janelle and I live in Seattle, and, you know, we're trying to ground, and you've got all of these electrical lines underneath, and that's not going to work. So what I do is I go down to the beach and I get my feet into the ocean, and it's like a Faraday bag. And so I encourage people to really consider, what is your grass sitting on top of?
Mm-hmm. Yes. 100%. That's a great, you know, really have to consider that. And, Yeah, you don't want to be grounding in a place that has like big transformers or a lot of smart meters or things like that, and like doing exactly what you're doing, like, oh, but I have this access to the ocean where I live. You know, most people, no matter where they live, have access to at least even a little tiny piece of nature where they could go and, you know, get
the electrons, man.
Yeah.
You know what I've started doing just this week? I have been, it's like, duh, you're a podcaster, naturopathic doctor. You haven't done this yet. But, so anyways, I was like, why do I have my Wi-Fi router on when I'm sleeping? So I've just been clicking that thing off every night. And it's like a mental thing where I'm like, take that, bitches. I feel like I'm winning a war when I do stuff like that. I mean, you really do have to take, you know, you got to feel good about the small wins. It's like, yeah, mm-hmm. okay, I live in the urban jungle, but guess what? I turn my Wi-Fi off at night. Boom. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we all can do that, and everybody's going to be okay, and nobody's going to die, and everybody, you know, if there's an emergency, listen, then you'll figure it out and you can plug your Wi-Fi in if you have Wi-Fi and there's an emergency, and you probably also have cell service. So I think like a lot of people think they're not going to be okay. And we've been trained that these things are now our security blankets, and we've lost touch of what our real security blankets are. Mm-hmm. And we've formed such strong attachments to our devices and Wi-Fi and we're forming less strong attachments to people and nature and animals. And it's like, you know, we have to remember that this is relatively a very new thing for us, the technology advancements. And we've been attached to people and land and place and nature for far longer. And we've been okay. And mm-hmm. we've made it. Mm-hmm. And we've figured things out, you know, for many years before we had these things.
Mm-hmm. But the security blanket is a good thing to bring up, because the phone has become that. I actually call it the pacemaker because people die without it. But it's like really interesting going back to the cortisol. Like, people literally get like have a mini heart attack if they're like, oh shit, where's my phone? Like, and isn't that amazing that a little tiny device like that can make you feel like your life is screwed if you lose it? And, you know, because they make it so hard for you to actually function or opt out of using it, that, you know, it is a very true statement, you know, the security blanket that is, we gotta turn that off. I remember growing up when, of course, there's no cell phones and you just have a payphone, and mm-hmm. it's like, I'm not available. And it's like your kids go outside for 8 hours and you don't know where they are. It's like, but we're actually, this is making us kind of like afraid to be out in the world.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah. Very much so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Constant contact.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you have I bought your book, The Sun RX. Could you tell us a little bit about that? And we want to kind of have people be able to communicate with you and have access to you in case someone wants a homeopathic consult or just your Sun RX book. Can you give us?
Sure. Yeah. So the Sunlight RX is basically what, the healing protocol that I used when I was healing my TBI, and it goes into more detail than I explained here on the podcast. But it goes through those steps that I was talking about, sunrise and UVA and UVB and so forth, and how much time to spend in each spectrum, and what the health benefits are and how that impacts our physiology and how you can use it to help support your health and healing. And so I have an ebook, The Sunlight RX, that outlines all of that you can get on my site and for under $20. And it'll teach you how to use the sun to support your health and circadian biology and everything we talked about here today. So you can go there and get that. And if you're inspired to have a homeopathic session or to study homeopathy with me, I'm getting ready to launch my practitioner training program where I teach people. It's a year-long program where I teach them how to be classically trained homeopaths.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's starting this September 5th, and it's a 12-month program. So you could check that out, or if you're interested in booking a session, that's also on my site, which is just my name, heathershepherd.com.
Sweet. That's my birthday, September 5th. I won't forget that.
All right. Very cool. Yes.
That's so great.
Oh, weren't you and your wife also doing some healing retreats on your property? Is that still a go? Okay.
My wife and I do offer healing retreats on our property. We've created a space. There's no Wi-Fi on the property. There's no cell service. And so, you know, it's all Ethernet. It's all hardwired. Yes, there's landlines in case, you know, you need to access things. But it's very much submerged in nature and on our farm. And so we do offer retreats on our farm where you could come and stay and experience that and or get healing sessions with us. And that actually is listed on our farm website, which is ohoconejo.com. And you can learn about our farm or check out the retreats there if you're inspired to do so.
Sweet. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I want to come out. I want to come out and meet you in person. That would be super, super
fun.
That would
be really fun.
Yeah, you all should come out. We would love that.
Definitely. Cool.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. So, we'll put all of that information in the show notes, all the websites and such. And it's just refreshing to talk to someone who's, I don't know, just has her finger on the pulse of things and not afraid to speak truth. So I really love and appreciate you. And I also love your podcast. Do you want to tell them what your podcast is?
Sure. I do have a podcast, The Primal Pioneer. And if you want to learn more about anything that we talked about, I talk a lot about homeopathy and food and diet and sunlight on that podcast. And,
That's fantastic.
Yeah. I've been binging it, everybody, so it's really good.
It's good. It's a lot of fun.
Very cool. Well, I appreciate you both having me on here today. It's been awesome. And thanks for putting it out there and spreading the you know, wisdom about nature and these practices. And I think the more and more it gets out there and people understand, you know, what really helps to heal and what we need to do to embrace that more. I think it's going to be just continue to support people's health and support the health of, you know, the planet and future generations also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And podcasts like yours and ours, we're looking to empower people and to believe in the healing process of themselves and their relationship with nature. So
yeah. Decentralizing medicine.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah.
Love you, Heather.
Love you, Heather.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Right back at you all. Thanks for having me.
All right. Talk soon. Heather. Bye.
Yeah, come to the farm and visit.
Yes.
Darling, it seems like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun. Doo-doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun. And I say, it's all right.
We hope this conversation has empowered you. Remember, you are unique and you are a miracle. Your body doesn't make mistakes. It responds perfectly to an imperfect environment. Until next time, go get that life.